Chapter 32. Is this to be my life now? Meetings and spying and listening and posturing? The backstabbings that Carus had once had to worry about as a blackguard had been literal ones. Here you never saw the blood. Though, to be fair, a metaphorical backstabbing here could lead to the actual death of thousands, not just one. That thought put a little extra urgency to the verbal fencing, didn't it? Especially when Carus looked around the Spectrum's chamber and wasn't terribly impressed by what she saw. Colours were supposed to be chosen by their satrap for their excellence and their piety. In truth, as with all positions of great power, it was far more complicated. Family loyalties, outright bribes, and even mistakes by the contending families could have led to a Clytos Blue being selected. And depending on the strength of the satrap or satrapper who appointed the colour might be a puppet, a representative, a delegate, or a loose cannon. It hadn't always been thus. The satraps had once been veritable kings, with the Spectrum having to wait weeks or months to vote on the simplest measures as the colours waited for their satraps' commands. Successive whites and prisms and colours had worked together, united in this, to concentrate power here, at the Chromeria, and here, in this very room. And still it bored Carus. Boredom was dangerous. A blackguard knew that. Boredom made you sloppy, careless, and dead. You couldn't get sloppy around Andros Guile. They were waiting for the arrival of a few of the colours, still. Andros had called the meeting. Carus studied the figure across the table. There was something different about him. Something that had changed over the course of the last weeks. In her time as a blackguard, Carus's identification of potential threats had always been intuitive. Her training had taught her to translate those gut feelings. Not just seeing a holistic threat, but realizing that the man was sweating, twitchy, not paying attention to what others around him were. Since the Battle of Rue, Carus had felt more and more that Andros Guile was a threat. She'd dismissed it as hypervigilance, paranoia, hatred. Now that she had married his wayward son, which he had opposed for almost 2 decades, he had more reason to hate her than ever. There were 1,000 reasons to see Andros as a threat. But why did she now see him as the kind of threat that made her blackguard intuitions tingle? Andros had always been a threat, always had power close at hand, but that power hadn't been physical in years. Now, something was different. He wasn't slouching anymore. In fact, he'd stopped slouching immediately after Rue, hadn't he? He seemed stronger, had regained that guile broadness of shoulders, perhaps simply from holding himself well again, but perhaps it was new musculature, or worse, and he walked faster. Why? He was older, he'd lost his last son. If anything, a normal man would be weakened by such things, would be hastened toward the grave, but not Andros Guile. Orholm have mercy. He'd gone red-white, right under their noses. He'd been aggressive and willful for so long that no one had noticed his transition, red to red-white. Carus felt short of breath. She knew whites, had hunted them with Gavin. Some could maintain the mask of sanity for months. They were a walking blasphemy, but they could speak of Orholm. They could hide almost anything, but they couldn't hide their eyes. And Andros Guile had been hiding his eyes for years, blocking the light, blocking temptation, he said. What if, instead, he was blocking everyone else from discovering what he was? Carus reached to her hip unconsciously, but there was no Atagan there, no Bichwa on the other side. Her own breath was harsh in her ears as her pulse picked up, as the battle juice began to flow. He would see her. He would take one look at her face and he would know. Indeed, these spectacles were different from the black lenses he'd worn before Rue. These were merely dark. He was no longer blind. No longer needed to be because he wasn't afraid of the temptations to draft. He'd already given in to them. And now her rational mind picked up those details she should have seen before. Andros looking straight at people, noticing visual details that he shouldn't have seen if he'd been blinded by blackened lenses. Mistakes. Sloppy mistakes for a man keeping a secret. Perhaps understandable mistakes for a red-white, though. They were not known for their discretion. Part of Carus was terrified, but part of her rejoiced. If he was a white, he could be unmasked, Unmasked, he would be freed immediately, colour or no colour, and then he would be gone. Dear Orholam, she could finally be rid of him. She knew that a better woman would mourn losing her father-in-law to a violent death, would mourn even more that he had embraced madness and blasphemy rather than taking a dignified exit. But Caris wasn't that woman. She wanted Andros Gyle dead, 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 and if he were shamed and denounced in the process, so much the better. As Delara Orange came in, reeking of brandy, Caris started scheming how she would unveil Andros and how she would get a weapon beforehand. Whites who were unmasked were often devastatingly fast in their response, and people facing a white who'd thought the person was their loved one were often tragically slow. Even blackguards. And it was the blackguards who had the only weapons in this room. Perhaps then magic was the way. She would have to watch Andros's skin, but the wily old goat was covered from head to toe, even wearing gloves. Proof, then. Caris had sworn not to draft, but she wasn't going to take that obedience, intended to keep her alive for longer, to be an order to die. She wondered if she could fill herself with green luxin without any of these drafters or blackguards noticing. Out of all the people in the world, these people would be the hardest to hide such a thing from. And yet there was no other way. Caris leaned over, putting her elbows on the table, scooting her chair back in a most unladylike but thoughtful pose. She looked from person to person at the table, but it was all a show. She wasn't thinking. She was hoping. The white was wheeled in slowly, and she appeared drawn and defeated. Caris sat up, and as if realizing that her chair was blocking the white's wheeled chair's path, she stood, bumping the young blackguard Gavin Grayling. She scooped her chair in with an apology and moved out of the way, then sat, dropping the dagger she'd lifted into a pocket. A dagger. Against a red-white. Not the odds she'd want, but it was good to have a backup if she weren't able to draft before he attacked.
"Before we bring this meeting to order," the white said, "I'm afraid I bear sad tidings. Our friend and colleague Aris Greenvale has passed away in childbirth this afternoon."
"Orholam, have mercy," Orange said.
She put her hand to her mouth.
"No, no, no,"
Gia Tolva said. The subred was her cousin.
"What happened?" Andros Gyle asked.
The white shook her head.
"Her chirurgeons said that she seemed unusually tense, that she knew something was wrong, but she wouldn't say what. She only cared about her babe, Ben-Oni, she named him, son of my agony. After she heard his first cries, she hugged him, looked into the distance, and lost consciousness. She never woke."
"Damn her,"
Delara Orange said with real grief.
"I told her she couldn't keep having children forever."
"We each serve as best we know," Andros said quietly.
It was meant to be comforting, and for a moment Caris believed him. She'd forgotten that before he'd become the spider, he'd been a man of charisma almost as great as his son's. She looked at him now, wondering. Could a red-white maintain such a facade? Perhaps grief was a passion, too. The spectrum joined the white in a prayer for the deceased, and Caris found some peace in the cadences, rising and falling. Dead during childbirth. She remembered her own childbirth. The pain. She thought she was dying herself. She had wanted to die for a time, and then she'd realized she didn't hate herself. She hated her weakness. She'd come back, remade herself, joined the blackguard, become brave. And yet she'd run from that child. Was still running. Still felt sick at the very thought of it. She hadn't told Gavin about it when he'd exposed all of his shameful secrets to her. He'd bared his throat to her, and she'd held him and listened as if she were pure. Her child. Her son, for they told her the gender of her child by accident, though she'd begged them not to, was out there now, deep in the woods of Blood Forest, right in the path of an army of whites. It turned her stomach. You can't run forever, Caris.
"I'm sorry to intrude on our grief,"
Andros Gyle said finally, when the prayers were finished.
"But as we all know, these present crises give us little respite, no matter how much we need it."
"Oh, for fuck's sake, Andros," Delara said. "Bring your business."
Caris grabbed for the dagger in her pocket. A red-white, rudely contradicted, powder meet sparks. But, Andros Gyle smiled sadly.
Dalara, I'm sorry, he said. I've been rude to you. Unfeeling. You've endured much in these last months, and I've added to your burdens, not eased them. I beg your forgiveness.
At first, Caris thought he must be mocking her, a snide, stone-cold, deadpan sarcasm, but his gestures were placating, his tone sincere. Someone leaned back in her chair, and when it creaked, the whole room could hear it, loud as a musket shot. Andros Gyle looked down at his lap as if ashamed.
These last years have been hard for me. I have seen my own power shrink. I stopped drafting to retain my sanity, and it was like shutting off the tap to Orholm's majesty for me. I have lived in darkness. The physical darkness made me sick, and became moral darkness as well. I have only thought of myself. I mistreated you, my fellow colors, and I abused those closest to me, my last remaining son and my wife. Now both of those have been taken from me. My wife took the freeing against my wishes, slipped away because she feared, rightly, that I wouldn't give her my permission. When I lost my last son...
He stopped, a hitch in his voice. He raised his head and turned his bespectacled eyes toward the white.
You and I have jousted for years,
he said sadly.
And for years I have resisted your wisdom. For years I have been on the very edge of the halo. I took to wearing gloves and black spectacles, not just to shield myself from light, but to shield myself from your sight. So you wouldn't know how close to that fire I stood.
He heaved a sigh, and Caris gripped her dagger tightly, wondering if he would shoot out of his chair and start killing.
It is time, Andros said, for truth.
Caris widened her stance, putting her feet on either side of her chair so she could jump. Andros began tugging off his long gloves.
At our last meeting, I am ashamed to confess it. But I was at the break point, and when we prayed for a miracle, I had only a mustard seed of faith that Orholm could do anything for us. For me?
He looked up, intensity writ in every line of his face.
But I am here to tell you today that Orholm is mighty, and he is good. I fell asleep at prayer, believing nothing could save me, ready to suicide when I woke. I slept. I dreamed. In my dream, Orholm told me that, old and frail as I am, he is greater than my frailties. He is magnified in my weakness. He is mighty to save. We are earthen vessels, but we can serve for his honor, and he will empower us to serve as he wills.
Andros took off his gloves and tossed them on the table. He threw back his hood.
I prayed. I slept. I dreamed. I heard. And I am remade.
He opened his cloak and dropped it in his chair. He took off his darkened spectacles and dropped them on the table. Caris had known that Andros Gyle was in his mid-60s, knowing they would die young, drafters usually married early, usually bore children as soon as possible, but in her mind she'd believed he must be 90 years old at least. He was old. He was decrepit. He had one foot in the grave. But this Andros Gyle wasn't the one she had known. She dropped her stolen dagger from nerveless fingers. Andros Gyle was bedecked in a Luxin red tunic, with gold brocade that emphasized the broadness of his shoulders, the power of his straight back. His once lank hair had been cut short, washed, combed. His skin seemed young, taut where it had been loose and flabby. But none of those were the real wonder. He laid his hands on the table, then turned them over. Neither back nor palm was stained with red Luxin, and as he turned his eyes on each colour in turn, finally coming to Caris, she saw the miracle. Andros Gile's halos weren't even halfway through his irises. He looked like a man with 10 more years of drafting in his eyes. It was impossible. It had to be a hex, a phantasm of orange magic.
"Touch me," he said. "Look and see. Dalara, is this a hex?"
No, she said.
She didn't appear to be able to say anything else. Giatalva did touch Andros. She touched his hand, his arm, in open wonder. The others needed no such proof.
"Orholum be praised,"
Clytos said, and if nothing Andros had done or said for the last few minutes had seemed calculated, Clytos's invocation of Orholum certainly did. It snapped Caris back to reality. Andros Gile, whatever had happened to him, was still Andros Gile. She shouldn't lay down her wits simply because the impossible had happened. He was a Gile. The impossible always happened with that damned family. Of course, I'm a Gile now too, damn it. Andros let the silence stretch until it seemed someone else was about to fill it, and then he said,
"Orholum has charged me with a task, and has equipped me for it, and today I ask the Spectrum to concur with his will. I am to put down this heresy, this blasphemous color prince, and to do so I must be made Promarchos."
It was a little rushed, but perhaps Andros Gile didn't see any benefit in waiting.
"I nominate Andros Gile to be Promarchos," Clytos Blue said.
"I second my nomination," Andros said.
"Point of order," Dalara said. "Do we even have a quorum? Green is gone with no replacement yet named, the prism is missing, and Aris has not yet been placed at rest."
"The election of a Promarchos requires a majority of the currently serving colors," Andros said.
Carver Black nodded, confirming the truth of that. Everyone around the table quickly calculated what that meant. Black had no vote, White voted only in ties. With Subred dead and no replacement yet named for her, and Gavin missing along with the vote he carried as the representative for the exiled Tyrians who'd moved to Sears Island, a majority meant he only needed 3 of 5. He continued.
"It's a high hurdle to be sure, but Orholum has given us a way to move forward despite that. You all have known me for many years, and you've known Orholum and how he works. You all know the crisis before us. I see no need for further deliberations. I call the question."
Clytos voted yes, of course. Andros voted yes, saying that abstaining would be a false modesty. That left Giatalva yellow and Dalara orange. He only needed one of them. If he lost both of them, the White would vote.
"I vote nay," Dalara Orange said, folding her arms. "You have played me the fool for the last—"
"This is not the time for speeches,"
Andros snapped.
"It's time for votes. Gia!"
Gia scowled, her unibrow squirming as her face went through a dozen expressions.
"I cannot stand in the way of Orholum. Our personal differences aside, this seems to me to be a very real miracle. I vote aye."
A breath went out around the table.
"The ayes carry it," the White said.
Her tone and face both were inscrutable.
"We will administer the oaths of office tomorrow in the Great Hall. Acceptable, Promarchos elect?" she asked.
"More than acceptable, High Lady,"
Andros Gile smiled. He didn't even try to hide his triumph. They were adjourned. Caris stood and walked out into the hall. She handed the dagger back to a confused Gavin Grayling as the young blackguard stepped into the hall, but her chastising quip caught in her throat as she saw a familiar figure waddling down the hall.
"Kalia?"
she asked. The little woman was not only a keen mind, she was also a drafter. Kalia had been the Third Eye's right hand, and had become indispensable to General Danavis, now Satrap Danavis, in ruling Sears Island, which Gavin had made a new satrapy.
"What are you doing? Oh, no.
That's Kalia Green to you, appointed by Satrap Corvin Danavis of Tyria," the woman said with a grin.
"Boat just landed a few hours ago. Would have been here sooner, but there was some mix-up at the docks. I miss anything important?"
So that's why Andros had seemed rushed. He'd found out a dissenting vote was arriving. One vote would have been enough to ruin his plans. A mix-up at the docks? Andros's people had been stalling Kalia while the Spectrum met. And on a difference of 3 minutes, all of history changes.